Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of women and men who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer.
Hello, I'm Claudia from Breast Cancer Care, and today I'm joined again by the amazing Rebecca, who's here to tell us more about her life with secondary breast cancer. Today we're going to be talking specifically about how you speak to children, to friends, to family, to strangers about your diagnosis. So welcome back, Rebecca.
Thank you, Claudia. You're very kind. It's nice to be here again.
So in your last podcast, which hopefully everyone here has listened to, we spoke about how you've learned to be kind to yourself and do things that help you really embrace life since your diagnosis. But what's it like speaking to other people about secondary breast cancer? What happened when you were first diagnosed and you first started to talk to people?
When I received the diagnosis of secondary cancer, I couldn't speak to anyone at first. I think the shock of it was such that I had my husband and my sister in the room with me, and my husband took me out and I just said to my sister, "You have to tell the family." I just didn't know how to articulate what I was feeling. It was such shock and it was overwhelming, and it took a little bit of time for me to be able to talk about it. But now I'm very frank and open about it. I think it's best, in my opinion, in my experience, to be very open about it. So it took a short amount of time before I was able to tell people myself what was going on. And I took a leaf out of my oncologist's book. So I tell people that, you know, the cancer had returned, which wasn't good news, but we had a plan. We had a treatment plan. And this is what, as far as we knew, this was what was going to happen. And with secondary cancer, I think one of the biggest hurdles is getting over the fact it's terminal, incurable, however you want to phrase it, and explaining that to people, that this isn't, you know, just a blip, quote unquote. Like the primary cancer, certainly my medical team treated it very much as this is just a terrible blip and an otherwise really healthy lifetime. And that with primary cancer, we deal with it, hit it hard with chemo, radiotherapy, mastectomy, lymph node removal and so on, and then that would be over and I should be fine for the rest of my life. With secondary, it's different because it's managing it for the rest of your life. So I think as time's gone on, it's now been 13 months since my diagnosis, I think I've got more used to handling other people's reactions and explaining to them. And I've certainly come, I think, a long way in my communication skills about it than that first diagnosis when, as I say, I was just in shock and couldn't really speak about it.
Absolutely. And you've written a blog for us about managing other people's reactions to your cancer. Can you tell me a bit about that? How you deal with that?
Yes, I'm quite open, and I certainly tell people I know that if other people ask them about it, that they can talk about it. And I've had one of my friends say that from their point of view, that makes it much easier because they feel they can ask questions, and that when people ask them, "Oh, how's Becca doing? You know, what's the latest?" She's able to say to them, "Well, you know, it's not been good news," or she's had good news and this is what's happening. She says my friend said that made her role as a support friend a bit easier. I think that being open about it does make it a bit easier. I think people are quite nervous, but if you take the lead and you say, "Oh, you know, by the way, I've got secondary cancer. This is what it means. I'm on this treatment." I think you have to judge each situation. Some people are going to be very upset and it's going to be too much for them to hear anything other than the cancer has returned. Other people have a lot of questions. And to the other extreme, I have had it once or twice when there are too many questions. And I don't know if other cancer patients feel the same, but for me, a lot of questions I find quite wearing when it's, "Well, how are you doing? So what's that treatment? What did your oncologist say? Well, how long is that going to go on for? And what will be at the end of that? And when's the next scan? And when do you expect the results?" And it could just be, people only do it with the best of intentions, but it can be quite a it can feel like quite an assault.
Yeah.
And that's where I think I've written about this and spoken about it. The hands up technique for me is so helpful. So I said to people at the beginning, if there's any questions that I don't want to answer or something I'm not feeling up to talking about, I just put my hands up in, you know, in a sort of stop way. Or if I'm on the phone, I'll say hands up. And that just means not right now. Let's just talk about what was on telly last night or change the subject. And I've actually only had to deploy that a few times. But when I have, it's really helped me from having to say, I'm so sorry. You know, I know that question is well-intentioned, but I'm feeling a little bit pushed. I can just say, hands up, you know, let's talk about something else. And because people know that I've got that in my toolkit, in my communication toolkit, they are quite receptive to it.
So it's almost like building up these different skills and tools that you can just pull out at any point you want to help manage those conversations in a way.
Absolutely. And it was on Breast Cancer Care's secondary, Living with Secondary Cancer weekend that I met so many other cancer patients who we were sharing so many hints and tips, and I certainly came away with some incredibly valuable ones. And one woman was saying that when people ask her how she is, she says, I'm fine. But for her, fine means, to keep it clean, fouled up, insecure, neurotic and emotional. And she says that when she says that, she knows in her head what it really means, but it saves her having to go into all that. So that everyone has different ways of coping, and it's really useful to learn about people, you know, how people are going to react, and to have your own toolkit to handle it. And people are different. I mean, I have with some of my support group friends, we're really, I think you say, inappropriate in our communications with each other. And I mean, one of my support group buddies, we were wishing each other Happy New Year, and saying, well, I said to her, what's your New Year's resolution, apart from obviously not dying this year? And, you know, with secondary cancer, you can have that real sense of gallows humour, which I think is sometimes a bit inappropriate, but it's appropriate for different people.
I guess especially if you're in a group of people who know exactly how you feel. Just being able to say that kind of thing, is that quite a relief sometimes to not have to manage someone else's reaction because you know they feel the same way?
Definitely. And for me, I think it's much easier to be very frank and honest and open and make a joke about it, have a real gallows sense of humour about it. Because sometimes if somebody says to me, oh, no, I don't tell me anything more. I can't, it's too upsetting. I can't hear it. That for me is quite upsetting because I sort of want to say, well, how do you think I feel? And I think to be a support, I feel that they should listen and they should ask a few questions and show an interest, I guess. And I suppose I prefer being open and frank about it. As you're absolutely right, it does help me to articulate it and to constantly, when I'm articulating it to other people, it helps me articulate it within myself so I can come to terms with it better than if I'm sitting silently and never addressing it.
Mm. And you mentioned something earlier as well when we were chatting. So Rebecca does amazing Instagram stories on our Instagram account where you very kindly send us lots of very short videos. We've asked you to do them in about 10 or 15 seconds. But you mentioned something earlier about having to do that helps you process it sometimes.
Absolutely. And those videos are no longer than 15 seconds. And I mean, this week I got really good news that for the first time, the first scan result in 13 months of scan results, it's come back that this new chemo I'm on is working and the cancer is shrinking.
It's brilliant.
And which is really good. I'm so excited about it. And for me, I did a video just before I went in to get the results and one when I came out. And it was so difficult for me doing it, but very helpful before I went in because it was just how in 15 seconds do I explain how I'm feeling? And it was nervous, worried. I kind of thought it would be bad news, anxious. How am I going to tell my family that yet again it's bad news, that we're going to have to try more chemo? And all those swirling thoughts. And actually reducing it to 15 seconds, saying, I'm quite nervous, but I'm hopeful. That for me, just sometimes simple is best.
Yeah.
And that was how I was feeling, honestly. And again, just when I came out, it was just, wow, this is really good news. And you don't really need to say more than that. And that 15 seconds, I think it does concentrate your mind somewhat.
Yeah. And maybe picking up on that point, actually, about how you speak to your family when you have scan results, whether those are good or not so good scan results. How do you manage that sometimes?
It's difficult because you just so desperately want, or I so desperately want for my family good news. I want to be able to give them the news that I've given them this week, which is, you know, the treatment's working, because for 13 months now, the treatment hasn't been working. And every other result has been, oh, it's spread to the lungs now, it's the liver, oh, it's now your brain. And it's felt like on repeat, this cycle of bad news. But it's just, I just have to be honest about it. And I can't really sugarcoat it. I am a natural optimist and I am naturally cheery. I think people probably have gathered that by now.
Definitely.
So it's in my nature to say, yep, it's not ideal. It's spread again. But we do have a plan, because that's, again, my oncologist is superb, always giving me a plan, and this is what we're going to do next, and this is what we're going to try, or this is what we're going to investigate. And I think I'm just quite straight with my family, and they know me very well. And I think they know that, you know, perhaps deep down I'm more upset than I articulate, but for me, I think not sort of breaking down makes me feel better about it and helps me to handle it. Because I think if I really crumbled, which is what sometimes I absolutely feel like doing, it just wouldn't help me, because I think they'd be so upset to see me, because it's so rare that I ever cry, for example. I think it would, it's really, when I do really cry, when I do really crumble, it's very upsetting for them. And I think to keep me strong, I would like to help them keep strong, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. And you've got nieces and nephews, don't you?
Yes, 15. Yeah, 15 nieces and nephews, were aunt and uncle 15 times over. And with the children, they age range between, gosh, I'm going to probably get this wrong now, and I'm so sorry to my brothers and sisters, but it's about 5 to 16, and a lot clustered around the sort of 8 to 12 mark. We have been honest and open with them from the start. We felt as a family, hiding something like this was going to be impossible, because, simply put, my mother was going to be coming down, my sisters were going to be involved. You know, we've had more family gatherings, and they can just see that I take tablets, that I wear the sleeve. Mm-hmm. They know I'm in hospital, and so obviously it's age appropriate how we express things. But we tell them, you know, Auntie Becca is very poorly and has to have a lot of medicine, and it's ongoing, and sometimes she's really very sick, and that, yes, it is cancer. And we know that they hear other things about cancer that, you know, we've seen some of them have reactions to that, because obviously when you see adverts about cancer on the telly, when you might see people in the street, yeah. Sometimes you can get a very scary picture of what cancer is. And I certainly know with some of my nieces and nephews, when I was in hospital having a collapsed lung reinflated, I think the idea of that, and I think they'd heard that I had a central line, so I had a tube coming out of my neck, and hearing that and just thinking, what's happened to Auntie Becca? And it just sounds horrific. I think coming in and seeing me, although it was quite scary seeing me with these tubes coming out of me, I wasn't dead. I was up, I was talking, and I didn't look great by any means, but they could actually see it, and seeing something putting a picture to it, I think, was slightly more helpful to them than their imagination and imagining me with tubes coming out of me. I think it's a scarier image.
Yeah, that's a huge thing a lot of people say as well, is that unless you tell a child something, their imagination will go away with them and go wild almost. So yes, it is important to be really honest. But yeah, that balance must be quite difficult though.
It is difficult because, you know, they're children. And this is, you know, as adults, we find it difficult to come to terms with the idea of having incurable cancer. So imagine what that's like for an eight-year-old with 8 years of experience of being on this planet and sort of, you know, only a few conscious years, if you put it like that. But we help them to do what they need to feel better. So we always say, you know, I've always said, if you want to speak to me, and I'm WhatsApping a few of them, and they occasionally ask questions, and I always say, you know, if you want to ask me any questions about it, that's absolutely fine. And they sometimes do ask questions, and they're quite blunt questions, but I'm very pleased if it helps them resolve whatever issues were worrying them. And they've certainly, a lot of them have drawn pictures for me, done cards for me. And we have a running joke now. A couple of them did me a card when I was in hospital having had my mastectomy, and they did a card, and on the front of it, it just said, "You'll be all right." And we now have this running joke about if there's a procedure and we're worried, one of us will just turn to the other and just say, "You'll be all right." And it's just wonderfully simple. And they've done, you know, when they've had a school fete, they've very sweetly, my nieces opted to have her stall raise money for charity, and which was just very sweet. And you know, others, as I say, have made me pictures and little art, made things for me in arts and crafts, and it's lovely. And it's helping I think that it's helping them to articulate how they're feeling.
Yeah, I was going to say that creation process is a way of them processing what's going on and also feeling like they're doing something to support you as well.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
So another brilliant blog you've written for us is about speaking to strangers on the tube, which is called "Dear Stranger, I Have Cancer." And you talk about how not everyone can see that you have cancer. And I think if people could see you right now, they wouldn't know at all. So I wondered if you could talk a bit about that.
Yes, of course. And interestingly, last week I had a bit of a negative experience on the tube when I got on, and I wear my blue disability tube badge, which anyone can get from Transport for London, and it is very useful, and it says, "Please offer me a seat." Mm. And if you're wearing one, people should, in sitting in the disabled seat, certainly, if they're not disabled or pregnant or elderly, they should offer you their seat. And I got on, and I'm of the view, I don't mind asking, I don't expect people to look at who's getting on the tube every stop. But I said, "Excuse me, would somebody please give me a seat?" And I always make sure my badge is visible. And nobody moved. Everybody looked at me and nobody moved. And I said, "Please, would somebody give me a seat?" And eventually one chap stood up, but he was clearly annoyed about it. If I was making a guess, I would guess that he thought I was making it up, that there was nothing wrong with me at all. But in actual fact, it really hurts my back, to all the jolting and so on the tube. But you can't possibly see the tumours on my spine to understand that. And, you know, you say people wouldn't know today, and that's very kind of you to say so. And I think, as I wrote about recently, I do really make an effort, and I put on makeup and I do my hair and I paint my nails, and I have a full head of hair. And I think the only thing you might notice, if you have a trained eye, is my lymphedema sleeve. But if you don't notice that, or you don't know what it is, you're right. I don't think there's any reason for anyone to assume there's anything wrong with me. And I had another very interesting experience when I went to a medical appointment last week, and I walked into the waiting room, and it was so hot, and I have hot flushes, as I'm sure a lot of listeners do, and I'm sure a lot of listeners will be nodding when I say they are the most unpleasant thing. And it was so hot and uncomfortable, and I saw straight away the air conditioning control was on the wall, and it was set to 29 degrees Celsius.
What?
And I just, I don't know whether I should have done this, but I just immediately turned it right down. And I said to my husband, that's set for 29 degrees. Can you believe it? And a woman across, sitting across, said, how could you do that? I can't believe you've done that. How dare you touch it without asking me? I had cancer once and I get cold. And how dare you do it without? And she was really cross with me. And I said, well, first of all, I'm sorry. I'm happy to give you my coat. That's absolutely fine. I'll give you my scarf as well. But I'm so sorry. I have secondary cancer. I'm undergoing treatment at the moment and I get terribly hot. And 29 degrees, I'm sure you would consider is pretty high.
Too hot for anyone.
It was too hot for anyone. That's what I thought. And it was interesting because she took a minute and then... I can't remember what she asked me, but I said something about my cancer and I think she got more of an idea of how serious my cancer is. And she changed her tune completely and was really sickeningly nice and it was a bit false, really. Mm-hmm. But that's the sort of thing where people don't know and I think they make assumptions. And I've had another one where I did a yoga class with a cancer charity and I... was talking with the yoga instructor, me and another woman, and we were talking about, I can't remember, just hints and tips of coping. I think it was hot flushes or something or other. And I started saying, well, you know, this is what I do or something. And the other woman turned to me and said, you can have no idea. You have no idea what it's like living with secondary cancer. And I said, well, actually, I do have a bit of an idea of living with secondary cancer, and this is what has helped me. And then I think she was really receptive because I think she thought initially I was being a bit patronising. Yeah. But actually, when I said to her, this is what I'm going through and this is why I feel it might help you because it's helped me, we had more of a connection then. Because I think people look at me and they assume that there is nothing wrong with me. And I have had it where I've turned up to medical appointments and it's slightly embarrassing, but the person I've been with, you know, member of my family or friend, and the medical person or the nurse or someone has come in and gone to them.
Oh, really?
And I've had to say, no, I'm the cancer patient, which I suppose I should be flattered about, really. You know, but I think it then results in a bit of a strange dilemma in my mind, certainly, is almost, do I have a duty to look worse? Should I look worse? Would it be easier for other people if I look worse? Do people, I don't know, look at me and think, well, you're fine. Why are you getting a seat on the tube? Why aren't you working? You know, why are you saying you're disabled and et cetera, when you look fine? And I don't know whether other people have this sort of experience, but to me, there is a little bit of a niggle of, well, actually, should I have no makeup on and, you know, put on a headscarf or something, even though I have hair, and make it easier for other people to sort of recognise the visible signs of cancer. But I think balls to that, because I like looking like I look. And I think I've said before, I like it for people to think, oh, look, you know, she looks rather glamorous, rather than, oh, look, she looks a bit cancery.
Yeah, and that's something you were speaking about in your last podcast, about how embracing how you look and really empowering yourself through what you choose to wear or through your earrings or your tattoo as
yes,
well.
Yes, exactly.
All of those things, they're positive things for you. They're not for anyone else. And I think that's a really important point to remember, is that it must be very difficult trying to manage other people's reactions and emotions, but I think what you do really well is remember to look after yours first and foremost.
And I think you have to, when you've got cancer, you've got to put yourself above everything, because you have to look after yourself. I mean, if sort of put it in very blunt terms, to keep going. But it does make for that slightly difficult communication issue. And I went into my workplace and gave a bit of a talk about communication, how to talk to people with cancer. And one thing I said to them was, one of the things I would suggest perhaps not to do, or the one things I find quite difficult to hear, is if you say to someone, but you know, you look great, that's a compliment, but it's when it's phrased as, but you look great, the other half of the sentence is left hanging as, because I expect you to look really bad. And sometimes I think it depends who you are, but it can make it easier if you don't want to talk about cancer, because it doesn't seem a sort of almost natural conversation that people will say, oh gosh, you know, it's awful, and you know, how are you, you know, it's really awful. And so, because they, I think they feel a bit uncomfortable saying that when you look okay. But I think it is that, it does come back to that thing about whether, you know, I should just go around with a bit of a badge saying, actually, I am really sick. I don't necessarily look how I feel.
Yeah. And finally, do you have any tips that you'd give someone who may know a family member or friend who's just been diagnosed, just about what to say? Because I guess that can be, you probably get strange reactions because people just don't know what to say and it's not really spoken about much. Yes. So yeah, do you have any tips for people?
Yes, I think say something would be my number one tip. I think I mentioned it in the last podcast. Only one or two people I know have sort of blanked me because of the cancer, because they don't know how to deal with it and they don't know what to say. So therefore, I feel like I've been dropped by them, and that's really hurtful. And I think say something, and you can really, I think, keep it very generic, because I imagine it is very difficult speaking to someone with cancer, not knowing whether you're going to upset them, not knowing whether you're going to say the wrong thing. So I would suggest keep it generic with, I'm sorry, you're poorly. Do you want to talk about your diagnosis, your scan, your recent news, however, whatever euphemism you want to say? Or just what I have said to people is, if you don't know what to say, say, I don't know what to say. I mean, in all honesty, if I get a text, which I have done from people saying, I really don't know what to say, but I'm sending love, that means the world to me, because that means they're thinking about me, and that's really nice. And I think you can't, friends and family, they cannot change the diagnosis. They can't help with, you know, they're not oncologists, or they might be, but, you know, the likelihood is they're not oncologists. They're not going to be able to help with the cancer side of things, but perhaps they can do other things, and it might make them feel more useful, because there's a lot of sense, I think there's a sense of helplessness when you're a friend or family member. So think about what you could do for that person with cancer. Can you offer to pick up the groceries? Do you ask them if they want any magazines for when they're recuperating, or feed the cat, or, you know, do some practical things? And I would suggest be quite specific about it, because that's the other thing I would perhaps say, steer a bit clear of. If I've had it where some people have said, just whatever you want, I'm there anytime, whatever you want, you just tell me. And then you say, well, actually, I could really do with a lift to the shops or something. And, oh, I can't actually do Tuesdays.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, you know, but having said that, when I've had friends say, okay, let's organise something to look forward to. Can I, you know, what sort of date might be good for you for me to put a restaurant meal in the diary? Something like that. And it's just, it's immensely practical. It gives the cancer patient something to look forward to, and I think it helps people to feel useful. So I would suggest that, you know, you offer to go with the cancer patient on hospital appointments, or just effectively think of anything practical that they might need. And if you're not sure, again, is there anything you want me to get you from the shop? Something like that, which I think is quite helpful. I would say listen. I again, people sometimes, they absolutely mean the best, but it can be a bit of, you must do this and you must do this. And I knew my neighbour's best friend's sister had cancer, and they did this and this did that. And sometimes you can have one sentence saying, this is what my diagnosis is, and then you can sit for 7-8 minutes while they tell you everything they know about cancer. And it might be a nervous reaction, but I would suggest, again, go back to those generic statements and just listen. How do you feel about this? I don't know what to say. Do you want to talk about it? Do you want me to listen? How you must be feeling, it must be difficult for you. Those sort of generic statements, and chances are someone with cancer will respond by saying, oh my goodness, yeah, I don't know who to talk to because I'm feeling like this. Or they might just say, I don't want to talk about it. Can we just talk about the telly or something like that? And it's quite a direct answer. And again, I would perhaps suggest asking too many questions, because those of us with cancer, we sometimes, I think some people take control of their treatment more than others, but it can feel like a bit of an interrogation. So I would suggest friends and family, again, just, you know, you might want to know everything there is to know about what triple negative means, but ask a couple of questions. And then with anything generic like that, perhaps, you know, phone the breast cancer care helpline, ask for them to explain it. Maybe don't necessarily ask for the cancer patient to explain all that. But I think, yes, just saying something and listening is golden. And for someone like me, that means the world when people do that for me. And I'm grateful. I really am.
I think that's a really, really good piece of advice. Thank you, Rebecca. And thank you again for coming to join us here again today.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You can find all of Rebecca's blogs that we've been talking about and more, because she does lots and lots of writing for us, on our website. And if anything today has made you feel uncertain or you have questions, you can call our helpline. Our info is all on our website as well. And we have lots of information pages for both people who've been diagnosed as well as friends and family. So we're here to support you in every way possible.
Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.